This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody. Time for our player spotlight here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. A pleasure to bring back to the program. It's been a bit since we've spoken to this man, but he's made some news with a very interesting play that received a ton of attention. I'm sure he can't wait to discuss it with us. Punter Michael Dixon is here. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Let's just get right to the meat of this whole thing, Michael. I know you've been asked about this punt over and over and over, the double punt. I'm curious, during that moment, obviously everything's happening so fast, but as soon as the play was stopped and everybody's sort of milling around going, wait, what was that? Is that legal? Is that not legal? Everybody's trying to figure out the rules. What was your sort of feeling? Like, you knew exactly what you were doing? You knew what was allowed and not allowed? Or were you like everybody else going, I think I'm allowed to do that. I think I was behind the line of scrimmage. What was your feeling during that whole debate, I guess?
Yeah, pretty much. I was just ready to repunt. So I had thought that it could be okay, but there was no point in me getting caught up in the moment. I really had to try and center myself and be ready to go out and hit a different type of punt when I went out there. So I was just kind of trying to stay calm and forgot about the play and was just ready to hit the next one.
Okay, so as you understood it, because there's a couple of things, Michael, where it looked like you might have been past the line of scrimmage, and then there's also a rule on, you know, guys releasing and going downfield before the ball's kicked, right? So how does that whole thing just disappear once the original punt is blocked?
Yeah, so if you... On your first punt, guys aren't allowed to run downfield, and if they do, then it's a re-kick. So, but if you on your second punt, it doesn't matter about who's downfield. And as long as you punt it on or behind the line of scrimmage, the back part of your body, as long as that's on or behind the line of scrimmage, it's legal. So my back foot was just, the back part of my heel was just on the 21-yard line, just like when a quarterback steps over the line of scrimmage and their back foot's dragging behind them as they throw it. That counts as a legal throw. It's the same with a punt.
So as you go back and watch that replay, what do you find most impressive? The fact that you 68 yards or something on the re-kick, but the one-handed scoop in the heat of that moment was even more impressive to me personally. But when you went back and rewatched it, what amazed you most?
Nothing really amazed me about it. It's more funny that I've thought about it, about doing that if it ever got blocked and the opportunity came up and it happened. It's more that. I'm just glad that it worked out and we could flip the field and try and turn a bad play into a decent play.
Yeah, and it was a good thing your cover guys definitely followed through with it, because you would think maybe they would get out of sync. But and then also in Indianapolis, you had another play where you kind of ad-libbed. I mean, that's two really good plays you've made, but that one, it looked like you sensed some pressure there and kind of moved to your right a little bit and sort of re-kicked that one as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that one was kind of just a combination of things all happening at once that made me do that. So I was hitting a punt that I aim right and I hit low left to get the return and not being able to field the ball. So it looks like a little bullet pass in AFL where it goes low and long. So I was going to hit it that way, and the snap was a bit to my left shoulder, so it brought my eyes to the left side of the protection just by watching the ball. And I saw what looked like to me at that split second a guy getting through the protection. So as soon as I saw that and I knew that I was hitting it that way, I knew that I saw it happen, and I paused for a second and I said, well, if I hit it now, it's going to get blocked. So I tried wheeling around, kind of broke the tackle and tried hitting a similar ball, but someone was coming across to block it, so I couldn't really get my foot on it how I wanted to. And at the time, thought I saved a block, but I probably might have been able to get it off. once I watched the film, I saw that the guy ended up tripping on his way to get to me, so I would have been fine hitting it, but in that split second, from my perspective, it would have got blocked, but we were okay in the end and got the ball off and got about 30 yards out of it. So it could have been way worse, but was lucky enough to kind of wheel around and break a tackle and get it on the foot.
Hey, Michael, when you don't connect on a punt the way you want to, I mean, there have been moments, I think even last week, where we see you kind of leaving the field, shaking your head. It didn't go as far as you wanted. When that happens, is that typically a mechanical that, hey, it landed on the wrong part of my foot, or my steps were off, my timing was off, or I got distracted, I wasn't looking in the right spot? Usually what leads to that? Is it just hey, I just dropped the ball and it hit the wrong side of my foot? I didn't square it up,
no,
so to speak?
That shank on the weekend was just dealing with a little bit of a hand thing. I just didn't keep it warm enough. My hands warm enough. And basically my steps were in rhythm, but my hands were too slow to get the ball how I needed it in my hands. And I was already swinging my leg through and my hands couldn't keep up. So I kind of just had to throw it on the foot and just wasn't the ball I needed. So after that, just made sure I kept my hands moving and kept them warm and worked on it. Like, there's always little random things each week that come up, and that was just one that I couldn't stay on top of. So, got that out of the way and remember to stay on top of everything.
And Michael, how do you get the ball when you kick it that far? How do you get it to check up like a golf ball? Where do you have to hit that off of your foot?
Yeah, so basically you're trying to get backspin on it. And if the ball has the backspin but isn't spinning like straight over itself, it cannot bounce back. So you want to try and get it spinning pretty like vertically on its axis and spinning backwards with the right angle, and you increase the chances of it spinning backwards, basically. But sometimes, you know, you're obviously going to get one that can shoot forward.
Yeah.
So you're like a pitcher in baseball, where you can manipulate the ball and have it spin a certain way, or have it, you know, the backspin, things like that. Is it, you know, I'm sure distance dictates how you approach this, but is there just a ball that, like, if I kick it this way, it makes it really just hard to catch it, period, you know, with the way it's rotating, versus, oh, I'm just going for straight distance here and I'm not worried about, you know, putting this spin on it that makes it tough to catch?
Yeah, there's definitely punts I hit that are tough to catch. There's a couple more that I have up my sleeve that I'll just use situationally. That I'm going to probably start incorporating those a bit more. Hopefully get some muffs and fumbles and stuff. So I'm going to start hitting some of those. I just haven't used them that much this year. So I'll start incorporating those a bit more.
Michael, Bob mentioned your the scoop, the one-handed scoop, and so you're an athlete, right? I mean, how much do you how many other different sports did you play growing up, and tell us kind of how you got into being a punter in American football?
Yeah, so I grew up playing Aussie rules football, and that the scoop is so I played that for about 10, 11 years of my life and got to a pretty high level in that, wanted to go professional in that, and just kind of fell short. Was playing in a reserve of a professional team my last year of Aussie rules football, and could kind of see that I wasn't going to go pro, and then that's when I decided to take up punting, because my best skill in that sport was my kick, and I had, you know, great distance on those balls, had a lot of power in my kicks in that sport. So I knew that there'd be some transfer of skill coming over to this sport. I didn't know I'd pick it up that quick. I started learning how to punt in May in 2015, and then was playing for Texas in August or September, whenever we played. So it was a very, very quick transition. So that freshman year, I was working a lot of stuff out. But yeah, so there's a lot of skills that you can take from that, and doing the scoop was one of them.
Now, be honest, when you first saw American football and you're playing Aussie rules football, did you look at American football and go, "This, look at these guys in pads. We don't have pads. These guys are soft out there."
No, not at all. You guys move at a different speed, and the plays are over in, you know, 20, 30-second bursts. So everything is full speed, full contact. The guys here are just built at a, you know, different body compositions here. So it's, you know, you need that type of protection compared to Aussie rules. You know, I'd probably be one of the bigger guys in Aussie rules. On the bigger end of the body types, there's obviously guys that are much bigger than me in that sport, but most of the guys aren't, you know, over 200 pounds, 250. You know, it's a lot more running in that sport. It's more of an endurance-based sport.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, you also had a run in Detroit, which earned you a nickname that I don't think we can say on the air. But that was, I mean, you've been exciting. You've been an exciting, I mean, you've made some interesting plays. And, you know, how many guys around the league can do what you do? Is pretty much everybody doing that, where they're kicking a certain part of the ball that's putting the backspin on it? Or because guys used to just go for the coffin corner. How many punters would you say are doing what you do?
Yeah, I mean, the league's filled with great punters, and they all have their own attributes that make them great for their team. You know, we're all super competitive, and I feel like the punting world has just improved drastically in the last 10 years. So, yeah, I respect every punter that plays on their team, and they all have all different types of kicks. You know, we're all competing against each other to be the best in the league. So it's definitely a fun competition.
How close were you to running that ball before the second punt, and how much do you just want another rushing opportunity?
Well, I scooped it with the intention to run. That's always the first option, is to get the first down. But I looked up and we were about 14 yards away, and there were just bodies everywhere. So I knew I had to make a quick decision and cut back and just saw more bodies. So I just chucked it on the foot.
Are you eager to get another carry in there?
Yeah, I'm always ready. I'm always ready to get another carry. I'm always, whenever we have stuff installed, I'm always ready to run it. I'm always ready to throw it. I'm always ready for anything.
Now, was that planned, the last run? I mean, that was just your instincts, right?
The run against Detroit?
In Detroit, yeah.
Yeah, that's instincts. And okay. Same with the Colts. I was gonna try running that one and take off. But you know, I got grabbed pretty quickly, so I knew I had to chuck it on the foot. So yeah, I'm ready to run it whenever.
Okay. So you have that ability to decide, and I don't know, what's your coach say to you, and how does he coach you in that regard?
Yeah, Coach Pete has been in my ear since I've been a freshman, saying if you see an opportunity, you have the green light to go. So
okay.
I've got it cleared with him. The special teams coaches, when I tell them that, they cringe a little bit, because, you know, they know what can go wrong, and, you know, Pete's excitable like that and just kind of joking with me a little bit, and I always kind of stir my special teams coaches a bit by telling him that, but stir him up. But yeah, he's giving me the green light.
Hey, Michael, one thing off the field that I've noticed, it looks like your collection of ink is growing. Did you get more work done in the off season, or is that what you've had going for a while now?
Yeah, I got some work in the off season. Just dedicated to, like, my family, and it's been tough the last couple of years not being able to see them, and I've always wanted to get something to represent them, and I did it in the period when I'd normally be home, so couldn't get home, so decided to pull the trigger and just go for it and get it done.
So, like most people that get tattoos, you figure out it's a little bit addictive and you want more. Are you done, or do you have more? You got more plans?
I'll get more eventually. Just whenever the timing's right. The timing was right this year, and it felt right, and I'll just trust my gut on everything. So when the opportunity comes up again, I'll get it again.
Well, Michael, it's always good to talk to you, man, and hopefully things get turned around in the way of wins and losses with this team, starting with the Saints coming up Monday night. Thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
There you go. There's Michael Dixon in our player spotlight. He's a good egg.
I like
he
him.
He's a good egg. And we could have interviewed a linebacker, but I said, no, get me the punter. So I specifically requested him. The two things that we that's not true. The two things that we teased ahead to and I didn't spoil.
Yeah, that was hard.
One was is, it was hard. Hard. Any part of your body can be on or behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, so the ball can be past the line of scrimmage. But right. If your foot, as his was, and we've seen quarterbacks when they do, you know, they go back and review where was his foot, even though the arm and the ball is past it.
Right.
Yeah.
Any part. So there was that. The other thing was, I thought was interesting, is he said that he's on the upper end as far as size goes in Australian rules football. He said, what, around 200 pounds, 215? I don't know, Dixon. You ever look up his height and weight? Does it even matter? But, you know, he looks like he's about 6'2", maybe a buck 90, we'll something like that. There. But, you know, I always thought that those guys were bigger than that. So
in Australian rules?
Yeah.
Yeah, they look like, and maybe – I don't really know the difference between rugby and Australian rules football. I mean, maybe it's subtle. I don't know. But they always look like they have big tree trunk legs, and they look like a bunch of bruisers out there. But, yeah, I'm not really sure how that goes for them in terms of the size. Maybe it's deceptive. But, yeah, he's listed at 6'2", 208.
Okay. Yeah, he said he was one of the bigger guys. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. But it's kind of funny because I have heard people make that joke about, oh, look at these, you know, Americans and how soft they are and everything. But like you said, it's not even close. I mean, you would literally cave your head in if you hit somebody the way these guys are hitting each other. So, yeah, but it was very interesting. I just, you know, that play, the awareness there. I've talked about that with the Mariners last year quite a bit about, you know, like Jake Fraley, when he made that game-saving play, I don't know if it was against Cleveland, and just having the wherewithal.
Was that the voice crack?
Where he doubled up the
voice crack of Aaron Goldsmith.
Aaron Goldsmith voice crack. But just the awareness and to always be, you know, ready for something and always be, you know, aware that, you know, maybe I'm going to have to improvise here or I'm going to have to, you know, just keep my mind on. I mean, I think for a lot of punters would have just panicked, and, you know, so he gets it blocked. The scoop was really amazing, really amazing, and I think he's just a very good athlete.
Is that one, though, if he tries scooping it with that one hand and it, you know, he starts fumbling it around, people are going, why don't you grab it with both hands?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, oh, yeah.
We marvel at it now because it looked graceful and natural, and he just did it. Seemed, you know, considering the circumstances, it was effortless.
Yeah, and if my memory serves me right, he kind of scooped it from the side.
He came with the right hand.
Which they tell you to do. We used to do fumble recovery drills all the time, and one is, you know, picking one up on the sidelines. You got to make sure your feet are in. But the other one is that you should scoop on the side because if you miss it, you're going to kick it.
Yeah.
And you're going to kick it down the field. And so it seemed like he did that part right, and just the awareness and able to improvise because things happen so fast out there. And so for him to do that, same thing with running it. He said something about how Pete has kind of given him the green light.
I think until it doesn't work, or makes a bad choice. Like if he would have run there and just gotten smashed, he probably said, "What are you doing? Why would you? You know the light is now red."
But yeah, right. But Pete wouldn't have said you should have kicked it again because I don't think anybody would have known that.
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, but I doubt that he's got like the green light, but. That's pretty funny. Yeah,
getting a breakdown from the 425 here on the difference. It says there's three games: rugby union, which I'm not familiar with, rugby league, and Aussie rules. And they said union is the game with the biggest dudes. Aussie rules is very different from the other two. It's an adaptation of hurling. All right,
like throwing up.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not really sure. And somebody else, Fred in Birch Bay, is saying rugby players equals power and strength, 100-yard sprinters. Aussie rules football equals marathon runners. Just saying.
Yeah, okay, so Seattle, like the Seawolves, that McIntyre and
yeah, that's rugby league.
Maura Dooley. Yeah, that says rugby union.
Oh, okay.
American Professional Rugby Union team.
So. Others are just shocked that you are positive. I heard Dave refer to our punter as an athlete, hashtag shocking. Another one that says, weird to hear Wyman talk all positive about a kicker, says the 360. And then, they're just surprised you didn't scorn him for not being a football player.
Well, the thing is, man, being on teams, like the kicker and the punter, they're always goofy. There were always something that was goofy about them. So, you know, it's just, I don't think that there's many punters that are as cool as Michael Dixon. I think he's just he's kind of an outlier.
Well, our guy before, John Ryan, he was a good dude.
Oh, we love John.
He had such a good sense of humor. He was so funny. I mean, he was married to a stand-up comedian, so that probably helps too. But
kind of remind you of Nick Ballore and what they say about Nick Ballore and how funny he is. And then the things, like, you heard on the huddle when his helmet came off.
Oh, about, like, being bald.
Everybody said they could see my bald spot. So,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of how Ryan was. He was sort of, you know, John Ryan was self-effacing.
Yeah, he was a funny dude. By the way, I like this, the texter on texter crime. 360 says, hey, 425, no one cares. Okay.
Texter on texter crime.
Yep. 360 taking a shot at the 425.
We should keep track of the texter on texter crime.
I love that stuff.
Remember, we got into the recycling thing the one time.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, that guy's an idiot. That
they
texted
got heated. Yeah. That last guy doesn't know what he's. You tell the 360 425 says blah. By the way, you brought up Jake Fraley in that play. The audio is gold. We got to play that.
Okay.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
Love that so much. Oh, Goldsmith. So good.
Anything could lead us back to that playing that clip again.
I love it. And it's funny. When we talked to him, he said he went home feeling kind of bad about that and everything. I was like, it's the best.
Well, what an awesome guy he is, because, you know, he said that because he's like, I didn't want to take away from the play, and, you know, it was kind of goofy and everything, but everybody loved it. But I think it's so conscientious and aware that he was afraid that he ruined the moment, you know, but
so
it just totally added to it, in my opinion.
Oh, it's so genuine. It's perfect. It's perfect. All right. Does the Seahawks season rest on the fate of Monday night's game? Is it that important? We'll talk about it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
So, Dave, we touched on this earlier in the show, in terms of the importance of this game on Monday night, for those of you just tuning in. Obviously, the Seahawks are sitting there at 2-4, and you got a primetime game against the Saints team who, on the surface, and we talked to a man who covers them day in, day out, talking about that defense, saying, hey, yeah, we can see the stats from out here. We're not watching that team every day. Are they really as good as the stats say they are? And in his opinion, and he might be a little biased, but said, yeah, they're extremely good defensively. And as you pointed out, they're getting some bodies back they haven't been playing with, which makes it even more formidable. So you look at that and go, okay, boy, this is going to be a tough task for a game that you look at and go, this feels like a must win. I understand mathematically it doesn't mean they're out of it if they lose, but the idea of them being 2-5 and then going into that game with Jacksonville, which you should assume, hope that they get a win. I don't know how safe it is to assume a win based on how they may be playing, but this just feels, like I said earlier, yeah, must win in a cliche sense, but you do need this. You got to get this under your belt. You got to find a way to be 500 going into the break.
Yeah, and Mike Triplett from ESPN, who we talked to, made us feel a certain type of way.
Yeah.
And people were texting and going, oh, this guy's a homer and that, and, you know, why is he pumping up this team? But, you know, I was thinking the ESPN reporters that we talked to, and our guy here is Brady Henderson, tend to be pretty objective, and that's what kind of concerned me after, you know, he was talking about, first of all, he's totally right about the linebacker they have, DeMario Davis. You know, so I mean, my point is, this is starting to look like a tougher game than we thought, especially considering the fact that they are 3-2 and they've had 8 starters injured. Now they're going to get some of those guys back, but they're pretty key positions, like Davenport, the pass rusher, who was their first rounder a couple years ago. I mean, thankfully, they have Alvin Kamara. You know, he's still out there balling. I mentioned DeMario Davis. They got Marshawn Lattimore, who's a really good corner, knocked down 6 passes last week. And they're saying that, and he's got a cast because he had some kind of thumb surgery. So I guess it wasn't terribly, you know, important or vital or whatever. But they say, you know, at least he said that he likes to shadow or follow a certain, you know, player, and they think it's going to be DK Metcalf. Now, that's good news because the other corner, and I think it's a Stanford guy, so I wish him all the best, but I think Tyler Lockett's probably going to smoke him. So, you know, you get that opportunity. But, yeah, I feel like the way that that team's playing, and you know how as you go through the week and you start learning more and more about the opponent, you start to see, okay, I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't think you can count any of these as wins.
Yeah, and the other part is we got excited about the Seahawks run game this past week. Like, man, like Alex Collins, over 100 yards, first back other than Chris Carson to do that since 2019 or whatever it was. And now you're going up against a team who's number two in the league against the run.
Yeah.
And you're going, okay, well, maybe that gets put on hold a little bit and you have to rely on the arm of Geno a little bit more than the legs of Alex Collins.
Well, and then Collins is banged up.
Yeah, they brought in a couple backs they're looking at. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be tougher than we all think. And, you know, and again, remember, they came in here a few years ago, 2019, when this defense was better. And they came in with Teddy Bridgewater, the Saints did, and beat the Seahawks. That was the year they were 4-4 at home. They lost to the Niners, Arizona, Baltimore, and New Orleans.
And then they're 7-1 last year with no fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one loss to the Colt McCoy-led Giants.
Unbelievable.
How about this? 206. Let it go, Bob. It's not happening. You won't see 500 the rest of the season.
Can you imagine that? I mean, and it's kind of weird because nobody anticipated in their little computer programs that, you know, were spitting out that the Seahawks were going to be, what, 0-9
to start the season.
Yeah. Nobody accounted for Russell not playing. I mean, look, that counts for a lot. Russ counts for a lot. I don't think, you know, you just need to steady the ship as, you know, as this time goes by. And so, you know, I think if you're able to beat New Orleans and Jacksonville, that's a huge victory without Russell Wilson. You can understand. And look, that's a pretty good performance going on the road, you know, losing in overtime. I thought they were going to get blown out by Pittsburgh. We'll see what kind of team they are. I mean, they're in a tough division. That's the one thing. I mean, AFC North is really tough. So whenever you look at their record, just like you would look at an NFC West team and go, yeah, they're all beating each other up. But, you know, we'll see how it turns out. But I still thought that was a pretty good improvement, losing in overtime. I thought they were going to get blown out. So now, you know, I mean, I just don't think you can – did you say the Saints are 5-point favorites?
They're 5-point favorites on the road.
If anybody remembers, and I don't know if they keep track of this, but I don't think they've ever – in the Russell Wilson era – has there ever been a time?
We need somebody who's a consistent gambler who knows who's kept track of these point spreads over the years. I don't recall that at CenturyLink and now Lumen at any point, even them being underdogs to anybody. Maybe it got close to even or maybe the tip. Because the standard is you get 3 points for being at home.
Yeah, three and a half, something like that.
Yeah, that's kind of your working number you start with, and then it'll move a little bit. Maybe you are a 1-point favorite at times or 2 points for a team that was really good. 5-point underdog at home.
Yeah, not during the Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson era, anyway. Well, I shouldn't say put those two together because Pete came 2 years earlier. But, yeah, with Russ there, maybe his rookie year. I mean, maybe when the Patriots came in here in 2012 in the UMad Bro game.
You think they were 5-point underdog? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, if you got to go back that far, that tells you what Vegas thinks of this team.
Yeah.
It tells you. And listen, we could put it on, well, you don't have Russell. You don't have Chris Carson. They weren't playing well with both of those guys there.
True.
That was the other part. We were wringing our hands over their performances each week with Russell as the quarterback, with Chris Carson as the running back, and going, what is happening? Why can't they put two halves of offensive football together, or what is going on with this defense? This is terrible. So this isn't a new revelation because there's backups in there now. It just makes it that much harder.
Yeah.
You know, we still, even with them struggling, you still count it. Russ only threw one interception this year. He was playing very well individually. The offense as a whole wasn't playing that great, or consistently, I should say. They'd have a great half, and then the other half, you're going, what, would they have 5-3 and outs or something in that one game where you're just like,
San Fran.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, it's just, it's, so even with Russell, we were sitting here going, this feels weird. And now it's just more of a daunting task with him not there, because you still have faith he's going to pull it out. You know, if they're within striking distance in the final 2 minutes or whatever you want to say, overtime, you still he's done it so often that you just have a level of faith that he's going to find a way.
Yeah. So, and you just can't count on that kind of play from Geno. I mean, it'd be great if he is able to pull that off. But, I mean, I think the one good thing that can still happen with Russ involved, I mean, he was involved in that game because he ran out there and told Freddie Swain to get back on the line.
It was a heads-up moment
just
by him.
Awesome. And then he saw him run out there, and he was like, you could see the realization, like, oh, I'm going to get a pen. Could you imagine if he'd have gotten penalized there? See, now,
how about him coming out for the coin toss, too?
Yeah, that was kind of different.
It's kind of weird.
It's like, he's a pest. Like, Russell, go away. Go. You're hurt. Go away. Dave Craig, by the way, playing the Saints in New Orleans, Dave Craig got a penalty for running out on the field because there was a bad call. Dave was hurt. I think he had jammed his thumb or something. He had ice. I'll never forget the vision of that. Him running out with an ice bag, screaming at the ref, and the ref just looks at him and just throws the flag up in the air. Chuck was so mad at him.
I could see Dave just going, ah, dang it. Yeah. They're always mad at me. They're always.
but it wasn't like, I don't think it was a crucial point. Maybe it was. I think
it could have been like with a field goal. Bag. Let me tell you another thing.
Yeah. But I mean, can you imagine if Russ had gotten flagged there? I mean, that would have been
brutal.
And he did a good job of getting himself off.
Yeah, you saw that moment of realization, like, oh,
oop,
hopping back on the field.
Here.
By the way, somebody texted in and said, when's the last time they won a game at home? Sunday, December 27th of last year. Against the Rams, 20-9.
Oh, that's right.
It's the last home win.
Yikes!
Because they lost in the playoffs.
We
to
just
the Rams.
We get so used to them being good, and especially at home. So hopefully the home, home field advantage will strike, and everybody will get loud. I think you can still see some bright spots with this offense if Geno can get it going. I think he can keep it warm until Russ gets back.
Coming up. Here's another doozy from Lefko.
Ooh,
an investigation into Carlos Dunlap's whereabouts. We'll dive into the importance of the D-line next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will turn you over to Game 4 of the NLCS between the Braves and the Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. So we will send you there. Stay tuned for that, baseball fans. They've got former Mariner Drew Smyly on the hill. He was great here.
Remember we had Smyly and Wiley? Smyly and Wiley.
Smyly. Wiley.
And
yeah.
Ryan Rollinsmith. You know what Lefko is?
What is he?
He's a radio tease writing Jesse.
Yeah. That's, you know what that's from?
No, I don't know what that's from.
That's Stink Tank.
Stink Tank. Remember he talked about, who was he talking about? He called him a football playing
Jamal
Jesse.
Jamal Adams
is a football playing
Jesse.
Football
playing Jesse.
Which apparently is a compliment.
Yes, it is.
So he was giving you a
Thank
compliment.
You. There, I was hoping you'd call me a war daddy. That's my favorite war slurism. My favorite Stink Tanker.
You know what? You look like a war daddy,
Thank
too.
You.
Buck 35. Left
Put some
home.
Food in front of me. Yeah. I'll war daddy that.
How much do you weigh?
Like 160. It fluctuates. 160 to 163.
Really?
Depending on the workout.
Lefko's an extra meeting guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
160.
Extra meeting guy.
With extra snacks at that meeting.
Yeah.
That's what you need with him. All right. Who on this defense, I know it's the entire defense that needs to step up collectively, but if you could isolate one player and just say, man, I've got the ability to sprinkle some magic dust on this guy and he's going to have his best game of the season without question. He's going to be what we expect him to be. Who would that?
It would be somebody who you think's not playing up to their potential, right?
Which means it could be just about everybody.
Well.
Outside of Diggs and Taylor.
Taylor and Diggs, yeah. You're right. Those two, I think. I mean, and again, people have been texting in about its effort and that this guy's chilling because he got his money. It's not that. It really isn't. Just watch. I mean, it's just he's not in the right spot. The guys that are doing that, you can see – they sort of, as we used to call it, like choke it down during a play. All of a sudden you see they'll get slower and slower and just kind of jog, and somebody else will make the play. By the way, this is significant, I think. Bobby Wagner, number one in the NFL in tackles, 72. Jordan Brooks, number six with 59. You know what that means? There's lots of tackles to be had.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, the opposing offenses are out on the field for forever. I don't like the whole tackle stat thing. I mean, those are great.
It's really deceptive.
It is. It is. And, you know, to me, if you're making them, you know, at the line of scrimmage, that's great. To me, it's tackles for loss. If you want to count tackles, yeah. Tackles for loss are huge. And Seahawks don't have a lot of those just because the way the, you know, the defensive line and just the defense in general is playing. But, yeah, it's weird because I am so excited about Daryl Taylor. Did, like I said, a football 101 thing on him and how his lean and how he can get the corner. And I saw that at Tennessee.
Where's that at?
710sports.com.
710sports.com.
Yeah.
Football 101 with Dave Wyman.
And actually, there's a bonus Rufus Porter story in there.
Ah, all right. Bonus content. So go check that out, 710sports.com. It
has something to do with the 520 bridge and one side being smooth and the other wavy. You know that story. But anyway, I just glanced at that and I'm like, wow, Brooks is number six, but sprinkling the dust, I mean.
Would it be Dunlap? It'd have to be a D lineman, wouldn't it? Somebody that's. I mean, I know the easy way is well, Jamal Adams, let him be the impact player that he was last year, and he's coming up with sacks because you need the quarterback to go down. You need to make Jameis uncomfortable. You need to force him into a turnover. Somebody needs to get to him.
Yeah.
So, I guess it doesn't matter, but I'd like to see it be a D lineman because it's just been so absent.
Yeah. Well, I would still go with Jamal Adams, though. And would it be Carlos Dunlap? Is that the guy
Probably.
You're looking for?
I mean, because I think he's the guy, if we're talking about expectations and who had the most or what, you know, we were most optimistic about on the D-line, we're going, well, you know, now you get a full year of Dunlap. You didn't even have him for the full year last year, and he was really productive. So, yeah, full year of him, we were sort of penciling him in for 8 sacks, maybe 9. Who knows what he's going to do? But, you know, we were talking about get 4 from this guy, and maybe this guy chips in with 5, and that guy is with 3. And, you know, collectively they're great. But I think we looked at Dunlap and potentially Hyder. Is because he had done it in previous seasons where he had 8 sacks.
Right.
Like, maybe those two would lead the way, and you've gotten nothing.
Yeah, well, and, you know, look at Carlos, just 6 tackles so far. He knocked a couple passes down, but after 6 games last year, he had 6 sacks, 14 tackles, 11 quarterback hits. And I went back through his career, and it's been, I think, since 2011. Might have happened in 17. It's just kind of a fluke thing where he had like a 6-7 game. It was a 6-game streak where he didn't have any sacks.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go back to like 2011 to find another one. I mean, he's always been active, and he just has been very quiet right now. So, yeah, maybe it would be him. But, you know, Jamal Adams, you know, it's kind of interesting. Last week we saw first Mike Tomlin, who we universally respect, talk about what a great player Jamal Adams is and how special he is, and he went out of his way to talk about him. And then I saw him talking to him down on the field, you know, because we got the feed that the network gets, and so it wasn't all the stuff that was on the broadcast. And he was down there just talking to him, like, you know, you could tell him he was just saying what a great player he is and this and that. And then when they, you know, blocked him coming off the edge, they used a tackle and a running back, so they really respect him. They think he's a really good player. All these people that are saying, yeah, he's not a good player, I'm sorry. That what you saw last year, that was him. That's how he plays, and it's just not happening right now. So to me, I would take the, you know, sprinkle the magic dust on Jamal Adams.
He's getting a lot of heat on the text.
Yeah, people, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird how they look at things. Like, they're not looking at, you know, how he's being used and why isn't he up on the line of scrimmage. But I get it. The standpoint of what we have seen, and you can't deny this, is a pass hit him right in the gut against the Jets last year, and then he got hit right in the eyeball with one.
It's not a good look.
And that was just a bad look, bad look. So I understand what people see. They're you know, that kind of stuff is the only thing that is in their minds, right? They can't look at any of the hustle plays or good plays where he's at. All they care about is that he should have gotten the ball. And look, that's 2 situations where he should have. So I guess you can't really defend that. But
no, and a lot of it is attached to how much money he's being paid. You know, and his mistakes are more obvious than perhaps linebackers who, you know, jump the short stuff or who don't take on blocks. That's much more subtle. That's something your eye is going to be drawn to immediately. I think for a casual fan at home, you see a guy going, charging in, the ball bounces off his face mask. Yeah. It's obvious versus, you know, another guy who's not doing his job, making a whole bunch of money, but it's not nearly as obvious.
But, I mean, what would you say? Go back to that interview that we had with him. I mean, he is so passionate about everything. Like, he talks like he plays. You can tell that he just – remember he told us, I was never going to not take the contract.
Yeah, he's not boo-boo the fool.
Boo-boo the fool, yeah. His mom was like, honey, you've done enough, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I just didn't ever get a feeling that he would be a guy that would be like, I'm getting paid, I'm going to collect my check. And no, he cares. And I think that's the way he's playing. But, yeah, the ball awareness thing, it's – you know, that's a couple of times. There's two or three. So I get that part. He got burned on a corner route by a tight end. I get that. I get the criticism. But I'm not seeing anything that indicates that he is just, you know, chilling and collecting his check.
I refuse that. I reject that notion out of hand. You want to say he's not playing well, he's not worth the money, he should do this. I'm with you on all that. I'll have that conversation. But if you're saying he's not trying, he doesn't care because he's got all that money now.
Yeah.
I reject it. I refuse to entertain it.
I hope he gets really angry about that Legion of Boo graphic.
Yeah.
You know, I could see him and Bobby.
Of the three, it's probably going to be Diggs. It would be most upset about it for different reasons.
He should be.
All right. Well, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Mike Triplett, John Clayton, and Michael Dixon. If you missed any of that, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast tab and scroll down to our picture. Click on that. Everything you missed every single day is waiting for you right there. We're going to turn you over to Game 4 of the National League Championship Series between the Dodgers and the Braves. We will be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.